If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome to the Explorinate Podcast.
Welcome back to the Explorminate podcast. I'm your host, Battle Mode. You can call me Ben. And this week, my co-host is Daz Tactic.
Thanks, Ben. And welcome, guys. Looking forward to getting into this particular chat. Yeah, this should be a good one.
So this week, we don't have Rob, Drexy or Sean. They're all off doing different things. But we've got a special guest this week we're going to do an interview with. He's an AI modder for 4X Games called Isle.
Yeah, hello. I'm glad for you to have me today on the podcast, and I'm looking forward to answering your questions and talk about the things with you.
We're really, really pleased to have you on because your name is quite synonymous with very, very good AI in the games that you've turned your attentions to. And there's a couple of those games. One of them is a favorite of mine, which is Remnants of the Precursors. And that game now comes bundled with your very difficult AI. And amongst some others as well. I also play Warhammer 40k Gladius Relics of War, and I know Daz is a big fan of that one too, and I understand that you had a little input into that one. And perhaps you could tell us some of the other stuff that you've turned your hand to.
Yeah, the first thing that I worked on was Civilization 3. Back then, the mod was more about this limited tools that I had available, which was this editor. And I basically changed values and added stuff that requirements for buildings that they can build and removed things that the AI couldn't deal with very well. Yeah, and the next thing, I think there was a longer break after that because I played World of Warcraft and there was not really much to AI mod with that. After that, the first thing was Endless Space, which actually had some programming interface for the modding. You could script in the mods and add some logic. And yeah, after that, I think that then came Pandora, which was the first real AI modding project in the sense that I had the source code available. And I spent almost 2 years on that in my free time, not the entire time, but worked a lot on it. And I think the result was really presentable. Yeah, from then on, there was a short period. Oh, yeah, I almost forget. There was Dominus Galaxia, which is quite similar to Remnants of the Precursors. I worked a while on that one, but I think it's still not out, which is a bit weird. I think it was in a good state back then, but the main designer wanted to add more and more stuff to it, and at some point, I didn't really feel like working on it anymore because the stuff he added made it so that the AI had to play basically different games because the game modes were so different from one another, and supporting all of that, despite not really enjoying some of the newer stuff, wasn't so great anymore. Then I think there was Gladius, which I'm a bit cautious to talk about. And after that, yeah, then was Remnants of the Precursors, which I also spent, I guess, almost 2 years on. I don't know if you are aware, there is a fusion mod which contains my work and the work of someone else who does a lot of options editing, which is more like an expansion than a mod, really, I would say. And recently, about half a year ago, I picked up working on OpenXCOM, which is now my current project. That is called Brutal OXCE, which stands for Open XCOM Extended. And I think This is also, I think, the one that is most popular of my things that I worked on, but it's not really a 4X game.
So one of those things I've always sort of interested to sort of hear about, like just the, I guess, the passion that people like with what you do, actually do with the games. And it does sound like you sort of really focus very, very heavily on one game at a time. Is that sort of like more the approach that you take with what you do? And is it really based on passion for what you're feeling at the time? Or can you fairly easily sort of switch from project to project?
Yeah, it's really about what I'm currently passionate about. It's not so easy to get back to a game like, for example, when someone reports an issue with Remnants of the Precursors and I'm not so much into it anymore. Going back to it is not that easy because my current focus is on that. And I don't know if I can talk about this because I also had a contract with Amplitude for a short while, but we never really got working and I completely lost the motivation and didn't even try to contact them about continuing the work. And so nothing came out of that, essentially. So I'm now focused mostly on open source games because there I have no issues to coordinate with anyone and can just do what I want.
Yeah, I don't think you're alone there, actually. It's sort of one of those things where, I think Ben and I are in an unusual position where we often get to meet different modders over the years. And I was looking through my files, actually, Ale, to see when we first made contact. It was back in 2015, from what I can tell, from the files that I have downloaded for Pandora. So I think that was the first time I came across your work there. Yeah, it's sort of funny, though. Like, I think that a lot of modders, I think that passion aspect seems to be fairly common, like where it seems that modders that do, I guess, the complexity of what you actually do tend to be able to, or tend to focus very, very heavily on a single project or single game, but for an extended period, which is why, you know, when you do come up with a mod, it ends up being just so incredible. Do you want to talk a little bit about, I guess, like for myself, and I don't know if Ben's the same, but for myself, I find that I can't keep focus on a single game for more than probably a couple of months. I don't know, Ben, if you're in the same boat as me with that.
Yeah, I tend to flip between game and game. I get very, very hyper-focused on one game, but I will always be playing something else around it. I'm just like that.
Yeah, it's really the thing about being focused about one thing. My view on what makes a great game is not so much that I want something new every time. I want one game to be really, really good at what it does. So keeping to work on these games like OpenXCOM, for example, the way how it has developed since it came out with the modding scenes and all the supporting for the mods and all the options that you have in that, it's like a really, really good game compared to even AAA titles that are coming out now. The interface is really good. Well, the graphics are obviously dated, but this passion that the open source community puts into one project over, like, I think it's like 8 years, and they're still constantly updating it, not just me, also the others. They also put in new stuff all the time. And that's something that I like better than just switching from game to game. For me, it's also difficult to get into games where I don't have the opportunity to do something about when I run into anything that I don't like about the game. I want to change it, and not having the opportunity to do so because it's not open source, it's making it rough. There's really not that many games around that I can just play and enjoy and not run into anything that I would like to change. And this is mostly AI related, the things that I want to change.
So I went through a phase when I was getting back into strategy games where I was constantly seeking, you know, the most difficult game, like the best challenge that I could get. And I was chewing my way through game after game after game and putting them up to the hardest difficulty settings and just trying to, you know, try to figure out which game was going to be the one, you know, which is my game. I needed challenge, and I needed challenge at the expense of fun to some extent. And I felt that so I kind of started looking at game AI a little bit, and I was just like, you know, what is it that, what does a game need to be in order for it to have a good game AI? I'm interested to ask you that question because I've noticed, for example, you're just talking about OpenXCOM. I've played some OpenXCOM mods. liked it. XCOM Extended, for example, X-Pirates is one of my favorite games. I just think it's so good. And I'm interested to know, like, what is it that about games, or what does a game need in order for you to consider it worthy, you know, for you to spend time fixing the AI or making your own AI for it?
Yeah, for that, the game just needs a good game design. And some games, I feel, they just click with me because they are fun the way they are supposed to be played. And when I then run into the AI not being up par to it, I want to improve it. But that's also the thing that was a bit missing when I was working on the or trying to get to work on the Amplitude project. The game didn't really click with me, so I was not really motivated to push it further. And luckily, I made a contract that made it easy for me to get out. So, and I don't really want to do this with the contracts again, because unless, of course, I have played the game before, and usually it needs to have been out a while, so, and not still so much in development that it changes from build to build and is a different game from each playtime. So well-established games usually have a better chance to charm me in the way that I want to work on them.
I guess with newer games as well, then the AI is intrinsically tied into the game mechanics, right? And if the game mechanics are changing as the game is still in development, or it's still being patched and updated, then that just, you know, you're kind of kicking the can down the road where it comes to having to fix the AI, because you're always playing catch up with the game mechanics.
Yeah, exactly. That was also the case with Dominus Galaxia, where I thought I was kind of done. And then he introduced star lanes and some way of design crafting and all that stuff that didn't exist before. And then the battlescape was also changed to a different size. And basically, it was this kind of catch up, and it was a bit annoying, especially if the things just felt a bit unnecessary, why they were changed at all. And in this case, I thought he just wanted to please everyone. But this is also something that I think I learned, is to avoid overchoice in the game. If you have too many options, no one really knows what the intention is and what is the intended way. And people get uncertain, and this uncertainty often leads to them not wanting to play it, unless you present something as the clear default and the options are just not so well supported, or they don't need to be as supported as the core default options.
Yeah, I guess that would be quite frustrating, actually, if the sand is always shifting under your feet like that. I was wondering, actually, because you've worked on so many different games and also in different areas of the games as well, you mentioned, like, with the Civilization, really, where you were mainly sort of just dealing with options, and then all of a sudden you're dealing with very, very complex AI with the Pandora game. Like, with your background, is it something where you can sort of switch between different languages, or do you have a different sort of structure that you like to work with within gaming? I'm guessing that even that must be very different across every game that you come across.
Yeah, that's true. The different languages, I've now done C++, C#, and Java. And the interesting thing is they are actually really similar in the important ways. And nowadays, the editors like Visual Studio, they are so good that you don't really need to know too much about the language. You just type something and it shows you some sort of autocomplete. Or if you want to do whatever is special about it, you just need to Google it briefly and then you know how to do it. And nowadays with ChatGPT, it's even easier. It can even write entire algorithms for you. You just need to tell it what you want and it comes out like that. And so it's not that difficult with the different languages, mostly because they are so similar anyways.
I'm interested to know, you've just actually preempted one of our questions. You were mentioning ChatGPT. I take it that have you started to integrate some of these new AI tools that are a hot topic at the moment? They've really kind of sprung, for most people, they've kind of sprung out of nowhere over the last year or so. Have you embraced this technology?
Only as a tool. The thing is that they are using the techniques that they are using for training these really large neural networks. It requires a lot of processing power. For example, when you look into how expensive it was to train something like GPT-4, I think there's 20 million or even more, like more than that, just for the energy that they needed to run the hardware for an extended period of time to do the training of this model. So this is not really feasible for the things that I'm doing.
It's certainly technology that is improving all the time, though. And I wonder if at some point we might be able to see some of the, you know, kind of the machine learning stuff actually filtering through into game AI. Now, I did a bit of AI at university. That was my original degree. I didn't get that far into it, I'll be honest with you. So I can't consider myself an authority on the topic in any way. And I understand that game AI is very, very different to when most people kind of popularly think about it. Artificial intelligence, it's really a series of algorithms that is about making choices. I wonder if you could describe briefly this kind of AI that it is that you've been working on with the games. Like, what's the sort of basic structure to it?
The basic structure, when I started to work on the game doesn't have no AI, right? It has one, and I think it needs to be improved. So the structure was radically different between the different games. For example, Dominus Galaxia had almost nothing. So this was starting from more or less from scratch. There was not much to do. Pandora had already really big AI over several classes distributed, and I just try to get into how the designer who designed it thought and then work with that and not to redesign it completely. In OpenXCom, for example, most of it is just one function, which calls a few other functions. So I just also made a really big function and started with what was there and then rewrote it as I went. So the general structuring is not really something that I changed, except for when I did an own little project which I did in 10 days to learn a bit of Unity Engine. There I obviously had to start from scratch too, and I don't really have a plan of how it shall look like in the end. I just start somewhere and see where it leads me.
That's really fascinating, actually, Ayle, because one thing I find with the work that you have done is that it feels like you're playing against a human when you actually do play against one of your AIs, and not just a human, but a very, very good human. And so I was wondering, like, how you approach that, because a lot of games you just find that the AIs will just, they're quite dumb, but yours seem to pulse. And I've always found that really quite fascinating to sort of see just how difficult you've actually been able to make the ways that certain AIs will actually play. And I would have thought that the games themselves would have needed to have additional components put into them to be able to handle what you actually have built. And I'm thinking of games like Pandora and also Gladius, because I mean, Gladius has probably got the best AI of any game that I've played. And that pulsing, and you had the same thing in Pandora as well. It just fascinates me that with what you've been able to do with that.
I think the approach is generally that I try to figure out how I think about this, and then I try to translate my own way of thinking into an algorithm. And I oftentimes realize that I don't really think about stuff, so I first need to develop the thoughts that I then can transform into an algorithm. It also makes myself better at the game, because there's a lot of stuff that I just do intuitively without really thinking about it. And I also had help in the form of someone who suggested an algorithm to me that was, in the case of Pandora, for example, I learned something because it was my first real project. So I was also taking an input from others. And the idea was a return of investment approach on basically almost everything that is economy related. The idea was to how much of this is this worth, and so I can decide correctly which building to build next, because there's always one that is the most efficient at the current stage of the game. And to identify it, I need something to compare how good it will be when it is there. And I basically wrote functions that just predict how good this building is, set it into relation to how expensive it is to build. And then you just go through the list. And yeah, the scoring is also the main thing. I just score almost every option that there is or that makes sense to me, and then try to figure out how to score it best to get the best results. And that's basically how most of my AIs are written.
That's interesting as well. Like, so you actually rather than just having like a build list as such, which I'm guessing a lot of games would just sort of have like, you know, build this first, build that one next type thing. So it's sort of almost like a linear approach. You actually do have like a, you go with a weighted score with, is that sort of how you approach most of the AI that you do build for the games? Like where you actually have different parameters will then improve the score for us for a certain response?
Yes, that's how it works. Lists that are static are really not my thing. I want everything to be expressed by some sort of algorithm that calculates the score, basically. So I can't really think of, when it comes to behaviors like units doing specific things that where it's only one thing that makes sense. But even there, I think almost everything is scores in this regard.
Actually, just another thought that just came to my head is that it's not just buildings and things like that. It's the actual, you seem to be able to get like whole armies to then go and do what you want them to do. And not just single units, but actually groups of units. I'm guessing, again, I don't know how you would have actually approached that with some of these games. I don't know if they're sort of structured to actually collectively look at their whole force and then sort of move off that way.
Yeah, with the unit control, it's a bit different, especially, for example, Gladius with the one unit per tile. They communicate with each other in a sense that they gravitate towards each other. So they do not just score the targets that they want to attack, but also get bonuses based on other units that are close to that. And I think the most advanced and tactical is the way I code now the XCOM AI, and they take so many things into consideration which I didn't think of initially. And for example, in this game, it's really important to be good at finding cover, and the algorithm that I wrote for this is quite processing intense, and so a big challenge is to keep the turn times down and look for better algorithms for that, and pathfinding also plays a big role. And it's really interesting in the regard that I guess that the programmers, that they looked for good pathfinding algorithms and just took something. And they also took something and didn't even realize the true potential within it. Basically, I don't know if this goes too deep in the algorithms. I'll let you answer this question first.
Oh, no, please carry on. This is interesting.
So there's an algorithm that's called a Dijkstra's algorithm, which maps the entire map at once and stores them in path nodes. And the original algorithm just sorted these path nodes by how many time units are required to get there, and then threw the result away and just returned a list of the reachable tiles that are reachable in one turn. But all the information, how much time units are needed, were then later recreated by calling another pathfinding method. And this was extremely inefficient. And instead of just returning the tiles or the positions of the tiles, I had it return the entire pathfinding node, which also had the information which direction to go from this tile to the origin and how many time units. And with that, I can do so much more, which allows the AI to process all the possibilities that it has in a much quicker time. And I can even cache these results so that other units can see what possibilities their friends have, or what the enemies could have based on where the enemies are spotted and stuff like that. So if you really get into it, you can find out a lot of cool algorithmic ways to improve the stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the things that I noticed when I was studying this is that when you're looking at pathfinding, so particularly, it's all about the heuristics that you're using, isn't it? And you're talking about multiple entities all informing one another of, you know, their potential decision-making. Doesn't the complexity get very, very large very, very quickly with this kind of thing?
Yes, it does. And this is also a bit of the challenge, or the main challenge, to keep the overview. And basically, when I go through my code, I often find things that are not even used anymore, and I added stuff and removed it, and it can get a bit messy, I have to admit, but that's also part of the challenge. And
now, when I've been looking at games, I've found that I tend to be attracted to older games for some reason, and I'm not quite sure why. I feel that modern games often they sacrifice elegance of design a little bit in order to kind of either add more features, or they've spent a lot of their development time and money on things like graphics. So I found Master of Orion about 4 or 5 years ago, and I got really into it. In fact, it was Master of Orion 2 first, and then I kind of went back to Master of Orion 1. So when I found Remnants of the Precursors, I was absolutely delighted that there was a kind of more modern version of the game with a nicer UI. I actually think the original game is very, very good still, but you know, the user interface is very, very old by today's standards. And I immediately, well, not immediately, I suppose over the years, I started to appreciate just as how tight the game design in Master of Orion is. And the AI is actually pretty good for its time. I mean, I think that game was like 92, was it? I think 92 or 93. So the AI seems very, very good. And I've come to over the years to realize that it's partly because this is an issue you touched on before. I think there's only one kind of one victory condition. So instead of having multiple victory conditions, it doesn't have to get confused over which victory type it's going for. But also the whole game is kind of structured around this kind of Galactic Council victory. The question I've got, I guess, is how important is tying your game AI into the design of the game? And as a modder who usually comes in after the game is made, how does that kind of affect the way that you approach game AI? You've already kind of said that you sort of try to work around what's already there.
Yeah, that's definitely an important point, that the game design itself is also really important in the AI design. And I would also say that, for example, writing a good AI for Remnants of the Precursors is easier than doing the same thing for Pandora, simply because the game has a lower skill ceiling, I would say. So reaching that skill ceiling with the AI is not as difficult. With Pandora, for example, there was always this one player who just was so creative in his approach, because you can do so many things. And for example, he was trying to kill one of the sea monsters early with a ship. So the ship gets to the max level, and then he would immediately use this time where he has a really power spike and attack enemies and stuff like that, and coding that into AI, such complex and long-term plans that are only possible in really complex games is a lot more difficult than doing the relatively simple things that you have to do in a game like Master of Orion or Remnants of the Precursors. I think I got carried away a little and didn't really answer the question.
I'm sorry, it was a badly formulated question, as always, from me. I think you've answered it. It's more that how important is structuring your game around the AI, or weaving the game mechanics around the AI, would you say? You know, if you were to advise a developer who was coming up with a new game, how important is it to consider AI right from the start as you develop?
Oh, I think it definitely would be a great help, because one example that I can name from very recently, I'm pretty sure you know it, is this game Ozymandias. It has a really strong AI, but the AI doesn't play the entire game. So this is something that I don't really like. And having the game having mechanics that the AI doesn't interact with, I don't like that. So I prefer if the game is designed in a way that that everything that you can do in the AI, in the game, the AI can do the same. Usually 4X are also special in this regard, that the game is usually, you are starting with a very similar situation than the AI. So you have to do the same things as the AI, and the AI has to do the same things as you do. XCOM, for example, is very different in that regard, that you play a completely different game. The AI just gets their units at the beginning of a battle and just has them and tries to do the best with them. And everything that happens outside of that is not really inside of the control of the AI. But I don't think it's a hard requirement for making AI if the game is not designed initially around it. It's more important that it doesn't change all the time than it having been designed with AI in the mind. One other example I could name for that, which I don't personally have contributed to, is Gaia Project. It's one of the things that I would name for games that also have great AI, despite me not working on it. And this was designed as a board game, so I'm pretty sure that the designer of the board game didn't really think about AI at the time it was designed. But due to it being a board game, these things usually have great game design anyways, especially when the board games are popular. That's the only reason for getting popular for a board game is having good game design.
Hey there, Forex fans. We're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Yeah, so actually it's interesting with what you're saying there about Ozymandias. So you're mentioning that the AI only goes a certain way and then sort of stops at that point. Did I actually hear that correctly?
It's not that. It's you have this mechanic where you can draw a card at the end of every turn. You have to decide between two or three cards, which you can keep. And this mechanic, the AI doesn't interact with that at all. It doesn't have these cards. So you get bonuses from these cards. Sometimes you can prevent worse things from happening. So what is recommended to actually make it fair is to give the AI a little bit of a bonus to compensate for them not having to deal with the cards. And I asked them why are they not teaching the AI this stuff, because otherwise the AI is pretty good. So
there's a bit of a follow-up with that one for me then anyway, to sort of find out what are your thoughts on AI that cheats? So many players actually really don't like to have AIs that get advantages to sort of compensate for their lack of being able to plan. Do you have any sort of thoughts about that at all?
Yeah, cheating AI it's a very wide spectrum of what you consider a cheat. Like, for example, I think you mentioned earlier the unit design or unit compositions in Pandora or Gladius. And this kind of thing is something where I allowed it to cheat in the sense that it knows what the enemy has, so it can build their own troops based on that. So I'm not guilt-free in the sense. And also my initial start with the XCOM AI, it was also cheating, but most people don't really like it. So for Forex, I'd say you should avoid it for the most part, especially resource bonuses or hard knowledge bonuses like them seeing the map or stuff like that. If it is things that simulate the experience of the player, these are, for example, unit compositions. If the player is very experienced with that and they knows what comes when and stuff like that. So this is something where I'm seeing, for example, Remnants also, when someone gets the repulsor beam, the AI will design counters to that before encountering it, because as a player, you would do this anyways, because you know that someone will do it and then your chips are useless. So the AI has to do the same thing and not just, realize later that it's too late and it is hard countered and cannot win anymore.
This is kind of interesting because we're starting to touch on an area of AI sort of philosophy. And this was, there's a video on YouTube that Soren Johnson, who did the, who produced Civilization 4, he talked about this and its concept of difficult AI versus fun AI. And Master of Orion, the original game, had some interesting things. So this had a kind of observation cheat where it was able to see the whole map, okay? But the programmers, Simtex, they actually programmed in so that the AI would send out, it would build and send out scout ships to give the player the impression that it wasn't cheating. So which was, you know, that's kind of on the fun side of things. I guess at the time with the processing power and that kind of thing, it would have been really difficult for the game to have been able to have an AI algorithm that would have been able to sense the world around it using the scouts and then build a plan around that, which is a bit easier, I guess, to do now. Also, we've come a long way with regards to the way that we approach the design principle of AI anyway. But I just thought that was really interesting that they cared about the player enough that they You know, they wanted the player to see that the AI was actually trying. Because I agree with Daz and yourself. Players really, really hate it when they learn that the game isn't playing the same, the AI isn't playing the same game. It's one of the complaints that we see about Shadow Empire a lot. When the developer VR Designs, Vic, he's been quite clear about exactly what it is that the AI does. In fact, there's a section in the manual saying, how does the AI play differently to the player? And the fact that he's been transparent about that, I think is great. And it makes the gameplay better. So I'm all for it. I don't care. But some people really, really dislike it. And it's almost like I'm just not going to play this game because the AI cheats. And I think if they found out, you know, just quite how much other games cheated, they'd probably, the list of games that they would be able to play would come down to maybe just a couple.
Yeah, I think for me, it's difficult to say exactly where to draw the line with that. But that doesn't mean I don't have a line. I think if the AI plays very differently to a human and doesn't just use some knowledge that it couldn't probably have obtained, or it would have obtained if it was more experienced or could look back at previous games, something like that, there's a question whether you really want to expend all the effort to make it learn this stuff throughout the game or get this knowledge in some other way, or if you just allow it to access this information which is already there in the game state anyways. So I think where I draw the line is when the AI can do something that the player can't do without even with experience or the tools that the player is given, and the AI can do something completely different.
Yeah, that sort of circles back a little bit to one of the things you mentioned before about with Pandora and Gladius, where you had the cheat in brackets, let's put it that way, was for the AI to be able to then look at was it just the human player? Was that all that they would actually look at, what the human player was building? So they weren't looking at the map. They weren't doing anything else like that. So it was just literally an expectation of what they might be facing. Is that sort of how I read that one? Because I don't, like for that, I think that's like for me, that's definitely pretty mild in the terms of the way that some of the games actually do cheat with their AI. Like I think that's quite a clever way of actually getting some nuance into the way that the different units will then come up back against you as a human player.
No, it's not limited to the human players, because that is one of the rules that I set myself to not make any difference between humans and other AIs. Basically, every AI knows the unit composition of all the other empires and then tries to make something which is best against the average of everyone else. And this is more or less the approach. And for example, if someone uses a lot of missiles and someone else doesn't, it will go some sort of middle ground when it comes to missile defense. And if everyone around it goes heavily for the missiles, they will obviously add more like that. And if they are at war with someone else, they will focus on that empire, of course, when it comes to who to counter. So if the human isn't involved in that war, the AI doesn't even care about the human, because as I said before, it shouldn't really know about the human. But even for that, there's exceptions. For example, when it comes to diplomacy, the other empires, the other AIs, they don't care about being asked about something every turn, but the human would be really annoyed. So there's some timers that prevent the AI from asking the human the same thing over and over. And they basically cross stuff from their list to ask the human so that the human has declined before. And then the human has to initiate the same conversation if they change their mind, and the AIs just keep asking each other the things that they want every turn. But that's also a point that I think the most difficult part, in the sense to satisfy player expectation, is the diplomacy. That's why, for example, Gladius is really good, because it doesn't have diplomacy, and XCOM also really good because it also doesn't have diplomacy. So I can avoid having to deal with that. And the time that I spent on trying to get something good for Remnants of the Precursors, which then ended up with having like 5 different AIs that the player can choose from, which brings back the problem of overchoice and they don't know which one to pick. And even I don't know which one to recommend. This is a bit problematic, I would say, for me.
It's interesting because before you mentioned diplomacy, I was about to ask you a question about diplomacy in 4X because it is it's one of the eternal bugbears of the genre, I think. And we'll look at Master of Orion. My understanding is that diplomacy in Master of Orion was baked so closely into the game design, partly because they needed some way for the player to feel like he's playing against a human face. I think that is one of the design goals of diplomacy in a 4X. You know, you don't want to be playing against a cold, hard CPU, you know, like playing against Skynet, you know, in some bunker somewhere. You want to feel like you're playing against something that's living and breathing. But also, trying to make diplomacy a critical game component that also has some non-aesthetic usage has proven to be really, really difficult. And there's not very many 4X games that really do it very well. Is it, do you think, that it's so easy to exploit for the player where the AI isn't able to kind of plot against the enemy? I mean, for example, let's take a game like Remnants of the Precursors, right? You might find that you've got a neighbor on your border who is strong, looking like it might want to attack you. So you give it some stuff and you make it friendly for a while. You build up your strength, take out another guy, get stronger. And then when you are ready, you can just take on this enemy. And, you know, that's kind of it. That might be satisfying for a while, but the AI doesn't seem to do that. It can't really, you know, think in that kind of way. Do you think that diplomacy is a weak point of this genre then?
Yeah, the thing is, I tried to solve the issue that you just brought up, that the player can plan ahead and do stuff like that by the AI not being fazed at all by what the player does, at least in some variants of my diplomacy AI, which I previously mentioned. There's 5 different ones of. I have one that is more role play oriented, that really focuses on that really lets the player do with them what the player wants. And there's one that is very focused on the characteristics of the race, which really tries to be a hardcore pacifist, for example, if it rolled pacifist as characteristic, or really when it is a xenophobe, that it will dislike everyone, stuff like that, or when it's ruthless, that it attacks everyone. This, I think, none of the approaches, neither the one where you let the player manipulate the AI, nor the ones where, or I forgot to mention the main one, the fusion version of this is the one that I tried to build by the what I had learned about game theory. So they will cooperate with others, but they will not ally with them, because allying is kind of broken in a sense that everyone would win if they would just ally with everyone. So it's just cooperation, time limited, without an actual alliance. And the stronger one, they know that the others will do that. So you have to think, what will they do and what should I do in this situation? But in the end, you get really different results depending on what you try to do. And I've struggled to find what the ideal way is, and I've a bit given up on it and like it better if the game doesn't even have diplomacy, to be honest. I have an approach, the last one I mentioned, which I don't know which you could whether you could record it, was the one that tries to mimic what I learned about game theory. So the player cannot really manipulate it a whole lot. And the AI will either work with the player if they feel it's the best thing to do, or they will work with someone else if they feel it's the best thing to do. But you can't really impact it other than being very weak or very strong. So they will just use it as input. But what I ended up saying was that I don't feel comfortable with any of these approaches that I mentioned. And that's why I now prefer working on games that don't even have diplomacy, or at least currently I'm doing that.
I see. Now, my dreams of you maybe one day coming into the Dominions, Illwinter's Dominions, and then making an AI for that, I guess that's probably off the table then, because at least in the multiplayer community, you know, the way that the diplomacy works out is actually a big part of the game. But even regardless of that, Dominions is just a massive game with a huge number of variables. The amount of units and spells and, you know, all the kind of fantasy 4X options that you get, it's just taken to the nth degree in that game. And I was like, oh, I'd really like Isle to make a mod for Dominions for the difficulty, because I think that would be really cool. Is that something you could consider doing, or is it a bit too much, would you say?
To be honest, I've never looked into it, and I would have to look into it to figure out if the game fulfills my requirements in the sense that the game design is fun enough to me. Actually, about this thing about diplomacy, it is not unsolvable, but this is a thing that goes more into the direction of the neural networks again, because as far as I know, Facebook or Meta, the company behind it, they built an AI for a game called Diplomacy. I don't know if you've heard about it. It's a board game, yes, basically, but one where you have a lot of player interaction with text. So it's a combination of a chatbot and a bot that plays this game. And it let it compete on the multiplayer scene. People were informed that they were competing, but not who it is. And so the AI was able to communicate in a way that had really that impacted player behavior a lot. So this was really cool, but I think the scope of doing something like that is a bit too much, and you really need a bigger company, because this is where it gets into the, we don't have a clear algorithm to do that. It's based on tons of experience and self-play and, yeah, knowing how the language works to score the best results. But I think this also comes back to one of the initial questions about whether we can see something like that in the future of gaming in general. And so I know of at least one time where something like that was done. And I also hope that we can maybe see more of that in the future, because I would also play games with AI that are not for me if I know the AI is really good. So, for example, like Gaia Project.
Yeah, because Dominions is very much like Diplomacy in the sense that it's very much a player-driven thing. There are no hard set diplomatic rules like you would get like a non-aggression pact or a, you know, a binding alliance. Everything's just done on, you know, on agreements between players. And that obviously throws in a whole set of complexity that, you know, is going to be difficult to model with, you know, like, you know, with something like a finite state system or the, you know, the resource based system that you're talking about. I do know one game that has, it's a card game called Race for the Galaxy, and there's an AI that was created for it, which was trained with a neural network. And the AI for that game is very, very good. And it's not a simple game either. It's a card game, but it's quite a, you know, it's like a deck building game, but it's quite a, I'd say it's a relatively complex deck building game. And the AI is very, very competent there. I think to make a game, to make an AI using machine learning for a game of the complexity of something like Dominions would be exponentially more difficult.
Yeah, I actually played that one, and I think it. I really like the way that the AI was done for it with the neural network. There were some things that when it did a mistake in the game, it would repeat the mistake over and over. But it was rare to get into these situations. And it's also, I think, one difficulty is also to fix something like that. If you don't really, the thing about neural networks is that it generates the algorithms by itself and the programmer only can train it. And if it makes a mistake, you can't really change it easily. You would have to retrain it or something like that. But overall, I would like to see more of this approach, but I think that it's also kind of limited to relatively simple games. I'm not saying that it's very simple, but it's very finite in the amount of turns, right? You can have like, it's over once one side has played all their board or something like that. I don't know. Was it 12 cards or was it more? And then it ends. So basically you can simulate many, many games in a short period of time and see the impact of your decisions relatively easily, so you can see which decisions were bad and which ones were not. And the more the game branches out and the longer it can take, especially if the game doesn't have finite ending or a defined ending, it just gets more and more difficult to do it.
Yeah, I really like that game, by the way, Race to the Galaxy. It's really, really good fun. So for anybody who's listening, it's a 4X card deck building game, basically. And there is a Steam version that you can go and check out. And like I said, the AI was made using machine learning, and it is really quite believable. I didn't actually come across any big problems, although I only played it relatively recently. So yeah, at least to my limited understanding of the game, the game AI seems pretty good in that. And it's I would imagine that extrapolating that kind of that learning process out to more complex games must be very, very expensive and time consuming.
Yeah, I'm not saying that it was a big problem, because it really was just in one game where I was like, I could really exploit it in the sense, but normally my win ratio was about the expectation. So if you play with four players and you win every fourth game, something like that, the issue was that I didn't feel too many possibilities of how to play it, because it had a relatively small decision space. But of course, it's also important to make the right calls. And it was also a lot of about psychology, thinking about what could your enemy do and what should you do. And if the thing that you do is good for you, but it may be even better for the enemy, so you might make a different decision.
So I guess when we started to talk about these kind of abstracted decision-making processes, we're starting to get into kind of game theory territory. And this is not something that I really know very much about, apart from some cursory sort of examining from YouTube and things, you know, watching YouTube videos. You mentioned that you'd been learning a little, or you'd use some game theory in your AI design. Did that play a big part, would you say?
I wouldn't say it was a really big part. It was more like an approach to find a way to get where I wanted to be, but I'm not sure if I really have succeeded, because the outcome of the game is, in a way, because the AI tries to balance the game, and so it usually, you don't have these decisive happenings. You don't just win, because every time you are getting there, others will work together to stop you. And in the other direction, it's also really hard to lose, because the other weaker empires will want to cooperate with you, because they try to establish this thing that I think is called equilibrium or something, where no one can do something that has a decisive impact on the outcome. And I must say, in the end, it felt as enjoyable as another mode that I also programmed, which I called Fun, which just tries to make a series of balanced wars. Basically, it's very arbitrary in the sense that each empire just looks the options that it has to go to war with and chooses which one is the strongest that is not already at war with more power of other empires than itself. It's hard to explain, I guess, but it's kind of like a series of equal battles in that sense. And that's relatively fun, but it's also really arbitrary, and it's not a way to play to win. It's just a way to increase the player enjoyment, which is one thing that I also wanted to experiment with. And this is the thing that I came up with in the end. So the game theory one is not so fun to play against, I would say, because the games, they get really long and dragged out. And mostly in the very, very late game, when you can kill others in one turn, so they can't react anymore, there's still this thing where you can try to get, and the AI would have to prevent that before you do it. And this is basically, I won a game like that where I was a little bit weaker than the other AI. It didn't attack me, and I attacked it one turn before me, and there were 50 plants overall, and it retaliated and also killed me off almost completely, but it was one turn late, so I had a small advantage and won. And this is also not really a fun way to play, but this is also comes to the game design. Because in Remnants of the Precursors, the later you get, the more the advantage shifts towards the aggressor, so much so that in the end, the aggressor can kill anyone in one turn if well prepared enough.
Yeah, so like just following on from some of the other things, just while you've been talking, I've been thinking, one of the things I love doing with games, and I don't know if I'm unusual with this, but I enjoy watching AI play against AI, even with games as basic as The Game of Life, like Conway's Game of Life. Is that something that you also enjoy, Ale?
Yes, I would say this is also a big part of the entire debugging process, just watching the AI play itself again and again. I even made it possible for OpenXCOM to let the XCOM also be played by AI, so that it's much easier to test and have something as a sort of reference so I can see the progress. because I give the AI of the player a verse or a static way of acting, and then I can see how the play of the aliens compared to that improves. And I don't know how many countless hours I spent on just watching Pandora play itself.
That's cool. I'm kind of interested to hear how your OpenXCOM AI is doing, because UFO is one of my favorite games, the original. I really, really love it. And I already mentioned that I play some mods, including X-Pirates. How is your AI holding up compared to the, you know, the standard UFO AI?
I'd say it's about an order of magnitude more difficult. If you look at the difficulties, I would say playing it on Superhuman would be playing it on Superhuman plus 4 or something like that. So it's a lot stronger, and I'm struggling really a lot. I haven't really been able to beat the game with it. I win some missions and I lose some missions. Usually it's important to know when to retreat so you don't lose everything. And I know there's players out there that can probably beat it. I'm watching them sometimes. There's players who play this for me who I can watch, like Trausen, for example. He plays strategies that I was not really aware would be played. But even against him, my AI did pretty well the last time we tested. The thing is also, the problem is in this, the game isn't designed in a way that you can really afford losing a mission, and because it's really setting you back when you lose your Sky Ranger or something like that several times in a row. So if you lose it once or twice in a while, that's still manageable. But if you lose it more often, it becomes problematic.
Okay, guys, this has been a really interesting discussion on AI. Like, I've been looking forward to talking to you, because I've got a kind of novice's interest in the whole thing. But this whole thing was really, really eye-opening for me. So thank you very much for joining us, Al, for talking to us about this, because it's a fascinating topic and it's one that comes up in the community all the time.
Yeah, then thanks again for having me and allowing me to present my newest project, which I hope that maybe some people play or stream even. Because one thing that I also do this for is to just watch people suffer and play against it. Or if they don't suffer...
That's very cruel.
If they don't suffer, I learn from it to see how I can improve the AI even more. And this is basically my goal in this sense.
If you're not suffering, I'm going to figure out how to make you suffer.
Yeah, that was great. It was...
Look, I'm definitely up for that. So where can we find your UFO project or your OpenXCOM project?
It should be on mod.io for OpenXCOM. I can also just give you the link after the, what is this, podcast, and then you can maybe also put it in the description or whatever this goes into.
Yep, I'm happy to do that. That's great. Thank you. And I'm going to have to check it out, because I really like XCOM. I'm not really that good at it, to be honest. I've been playing since the original game came out in about 93, was it, or 94? No, I think it was 95 even. But yeah, I've been playing since that, but still, I'm still not that good at it. So I expect I'm going to get absolutely crushed. But yeah, I'd be happy to check it out. Daz, thank you for joining us again, mate.
Yeah, thanks, Ben, and thanks, Isle. It was great, actually. Great to be involved again. So thanks for the invite.
You're always welcome, sir. Okay, guys. Well, this was Ben, Isle, and Daz Tactic for Explorminate. Keep exploring, guys, and catch you next time.